Hey, everybody. Welcome back to another edition of the Mundane Festival podcast. I'm your host, Chris Lamberth. Today is Sunday, April 12th, 2020. Remember, as always, you can subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, and on Podbean, the host site. If you like this show, please rate and review it on Apple Podcasts and or Stitcher. Give it a 5-star review. Let everyone know why you like it, because it will make me feel good about myself and most of the life decisions that I've made so far. You can email the show at mundanefestivalpod@gmail.com. Let me know what's on your mind. More importantly, what's on your heart. You can like the show on Facebook. You can follow it on Twitter at Mundane Festival. And you can follow me, your host, the guy talking to you right now, on Twitter at Chris Lamberth. This is episode 415. I have a super special return guest. You know him. You love him. He's one of your faves. Don Will from Tanya Morgan and Butterboy and a whole host of other things. He's back on the show, and I'm super excited to share that conversation with you. And I'll do that in a little bit. I just want to do a little housework. I did some housework in my apartment. There's more to be done, but I look like less of a savage. So I'm happy with that. And there's more chipping away to do. I hope this podcast is finding you well. Happy Easter. Happy Passover. Happy Sunday, whatever you celebrate. I hope you're doing that in close proximity of your home and with the people that you're quarantined with. And if you're not quarantined with anybody, I hope you are having a wonderful Skype or Zoom conversation or what have you. I am sitting here in my apartment on my couch recording this intro. I got a big huge announcement for me, for things that are going on in my world. I am putting out a stand-up comedy EP, my debut comedy EP. It's called Failed Running Back, and it's going to be available wherever you listen and stream music and buy it. I want you to buy it because it's worth it. You know, I've been doing this podcast for over 7 years, and I haven't asked you for much. I've asked you to come to a couple shows. Some of you have came to them. Five of you have been to the numerous shows that I've been to, that I've performed on. And a handful of you are over on the Patreon feed, and I appreciate you. And it's because of you that this podcast still exists. So thank you for those Patreon people. I appreciate you more than you know. You have an episode that's up as I'm speaking, a new, fresh episode. Buy this thing. It's coming out soon. It's going to be under $10. I haven't set the price yet, but it's under 10 bucks. I know times are hard for a lot of people, but I think this is going to entertain you for a good while. And it has a good replay factor because it's all A material, and it's good. It's really good, and I'm really proud of it, and it's coming out soon. So I think May 8th is going to be the release date, and once I get all that info up, I will definitely share it with you on social media and promote the shit out of it. I've already booked some guest spots on some podcasts, and I'm super excited about that. But it's a labor of love. I've never done anything like this. I've done stand up on TV before. I've done stand up on public access in Staten Island, and I've done a show on Access TV. I don't even know if that channel exists anymore, but the set is somewhere on YouTube, and it's there. But I've never released anything like this, and I'm super excited to do it. And it's just all done by me. The great Andy Klein is doing the sound. He's working on the sound to get it right for you guys. And it's a prelude to something the full length. So this is like the full title is called Failed Running Back: Setups and Punchlines, Volume 1, and it's a bit of a nod to Jill Scott. One of my favorite soul singers. And when Jill Scott first came out, I just remember somebody recommending it. I think I was getting to be completely honest, I think I was getting a cell phone, my first cell phone, and I was with my mother. And I remember one of these, the guy selling us the phone said, oh, yeah, you should, you like music? I said, yeah, I think I was talking about my radio show at Mount St. Mary's College, now a university. And he said, you got to check out this lady, Jill Scott. She's really dope. And I remember going to the record store. It's like, I've never heard of her. And the album's like, Who is Jill Scott? Words and Sounds, Volume 1. And boy, was I blown away. So I hope that happens to you when you hear my stand-up and people that have never heard of me before. I know there's like several hundred of you that have heard of me. But let's hope that more you share it with people and you like it. I made this a sentimental post on Instagram and social media and all that good stuff. And I hope that you guys enjoy it. And the more that comes out, the more as we get closer to the pre-order time, I will release the album cover and all the pre-order details. And I hope you do that. Let's make this project a number one on iTunes. Whatever you have to do that pre-order thing, let's beat Bill Cosby. Let's beat Bill Cosby's fifth album. Let's beat Jim Gaffigan for like 45 minutes out of the day. Let's beat these titans. Let's take these titans down for at least a day. Let's at least have that, you know? Let me have that for one day. Just not even a whole day. If it's in an hour, just can I get that screenshot? Let's get that screenshot of failed running back Setups and Punchlines Volume 1 being at the top of the comedy charts. I think we can do it. This is the little podcast that could and has shown you that it's been great at times. Not always, but it's been great at times. And I think that you guys are aware of that when it's been great, you know? All right, so that's my pitch. It's coming out soon. May 8th is the release date, I believe. And we're going to get that out to you. And I'm super excited to share that. I think that's it. That's it. So you can also catch me on the Three Guys on podcast this week. I think I said some things that could have gotten me canceled, but I think that's on the Patreon episode. I want to say it's on the Patreon. So you won't be able to hear it unless it's on Patreon. But I think I might have been talking about Louis C.K.'s album, but I think that might have been on the second episode, which is non-Patreon. So then, well, so if that is true, I think I'm going to get canceled after this week, and then that might make my album sell a little more. So let me just be one of your problematic faves, okay? How about that? I hope everybody's staying safe and you're staying inside and only going out when you need to go out. And I hope I hope that that's going well for you. And I hope you're not losing your mind. Me, I've been able to work from home. Thankful to be doing that for as long as I can do that. And that's given me some sense of normalcy, a routine than it's given me a routine. Yeah, and so let's just get to Don Will. So Don Will and I had this conversation that I'm going to share with you like a couple of weeks ago. So you got some episodes that are banked, and so you might be hearing us talk about shows that I already seen that, or you might have heard some things that we talk about. We recorded this last month, but I was listening back to it, and I had such a good time chatting and laughing with Don Will. He's great. He's one of your favorite guests. I've been told that you guys love this dude, and he's been on the show a few times, and I like talking to him. And make sure that you buy his new EP called Safe. So that's why I wanted to tell you. He's got a new EP called Safe, which we were talking about a couple days after it came out last month. And then since then, he's put out a project with his Von P, his partner, his good friend Von P. Together they make the group Tanya Morgan. They have a new EP out that came out on Friday called Be Right Back. It's dope. It's fun. Check it out. Support this man. He's very talented. He's very funny. And he's always a good time. So without further ado, please enjoy my conversation with the mighty Don Will. Here we go. Hey, everybody. Welcome back to another special COVID edition of the Mundane Festival podcast. I'm your host, Chris Lamberth. And today I have with me one of your favorite guests, a Mundane Festival favorite. He's been on a couple times. You know him. You love him. He's an actor. He's a very talented MC and a black father. Don Will, how the hell are you, man?
Hey, I'm pretty good, man. In my mind, I imagine like a studio audience clapping and shit when they heard my name. I walk out.
Well, they're excited. I think they're going to see your at symbol on Twitter. They're going to see your tag, and then they're going to be, oh, shit. And then they're going to rush to their phones and or download it or whatever people do now.
Brought the heavy hitter out.
Yeah. Big guns. Been trying to get you back on, and this pandemic made it possible.
The pandemic makes all things possible. You know what I'm saying? Clorox is doing numbers right now. Pandemic is popping for people.
Yeah, man, and you have a new EP out called Safe that dropped yesterday.
I do, and I did that. I made it. I started recording it on Tuesday of last week.
Okay.
And on a whim, I have several podcasts because I live in. That's funny. And my friend was like, "Yo, check out this sample." And DJ Harrison put up the drum. Mm-hmm. Dope producer out of Virginia. Oh shit, let me check it out. I'm gonna make a beat out of it. I made a beat, man. I sent it to him in the group chat, man. You have to.
Okay.
Cool. I rap to it. And then I put it up on Instagram, like, yo, might want to rap to it. Cool, man. Whatever. Then I was like, that was kind of fun. That made me forget. It made me forget, like, that I just watched Cuomo tell me that I can't go outside. Then I watched Trump be racist. It just made me forget about everything. I'm just doing music for a couple of days.
Yeah. It seems like you're kind of breaking up a little bit.
Oh, really?
Yeah, is it? You have your headphones.
I'm going to go to speakerphone. I'm going to shift the speakerphone.
Because it seems a little muffled.
Yeah. It's probably just because this thing is, the speaker was probably jostling against my hoodie.
Okay, you're golden now.
Yeah, speakerphone is the way.
Okay.
These headphones suck. But long story short, man, I did it to take my mind off of whatever was going on, you know what I'm saying?
Wrote, sure.
Produced it and all that shit and threw it up because Bandcamp waived their fees. And to be completely honest, I know you feel this, a lot of creatives and freelance people, our income streams have...
Yes.
Stop streaming.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know what I'm saying? Like, I was just like, well, that can be a way to kind of boost my personal economy.
Yeah.
Help me figure out some things over here. Because the other thing, too, is like a lot of people are out of work and a lot of people are trying to figure things out.
Mm-hmm.
And making art right now seems, it feels selfish in a way. But it also, as an artist, I also understand that that's, I think people understand that's our lifeblood and our livelihood.
Right.
We're making stuff that hopefully will resonate and get you through. I mean, it's not like I put out an EP full of trying to get my dick sucked tonight. Yeah. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like the EP is very much.
It's what we know and love about you.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you. Yeah.
Yeah.
Thank you for putting a button on that because I would have rambled.
Well, I do that too, but sometimes I have moments of clarity and grace that get me through podcasts and conversations. You know,
listen, man, clarity and grace—that is a heavy bar right there.
Yeah, so about a year or two ago, it had to be maybe last year. You were in this abandoned mall in Cincinnati, and were you scouting for that video for Cincinnati? What's the record?
Cincinnatian,
right? Were you scouting that, or were you?
No, I was. So my mom was going to physical therapy
okay.
in that area, and I didn't have a car. I went home to visit. And I was just using her car. I
yeah.
dropped her off. She was like, She's like, therapy takes about an hour. And I was like, well, I have an hour to kill. I'm not going to sit in this doctor's office. Let me just go to the mall since it's right there. And like, I just, in my mind, was like, I'm going to the mall. And I walked in and it's like, there's no mall here.
Mm-hmm. Like, yeah.
There's just a structure with doors and floors and walls, but there's no stores. I mean, there were like the anchor stores and shit still. But so I was in there and I remember I went live on Instagram, like, yo, this is crazy.
Yeah.
Somebody should shoot a video in here. Just like my creative mind was like, somebody should do a video in here. This would be a dope location. And since I don't live there, you know what I'm saying? I just had to pocket it mm-hmm. in terms of like a location. But after we put out the album and I sat with it for a minute. And I was going home for I was going home for something. I don't remember what it was. But I remember being like, yo, I have to put a video together for this shit. So I called up Jerm and got him to come through for me. You know what I'm saying? He came up from Atlanta for it. But it was one of those moments where just serendipity and luck and a little bit of planning. It came together relatively quick over the course of like a month.
Okay.
I tend to work spur of the moment, if you have it. I think that's the one thing that's traveled through my career. Like, the one thread is that, like, I'll decide to make an EP in a week, or I'll be like, we should make a video right now.
Yeah.
I'm one of those types of creators. I don't really plot shit out too well.
Well, it seems to be working for you. I mean, this is for the One Word No Space album. That was like, what? That was last year, right?
Yeah, that was June.
Yeah, yeah. What do you think about that? Oh, keep going on that, because I wanted to ask you something else too about the.
As an album is it was that album was originally supposed to be something else. It was originally supposed to be titled Reiteration. But that changed. The album existed for so long. Like, there's a whole other version of that album that exists.
Mm.
Like, and I might, what I was thinking about doing originally was releasing the demos as like a mixtape.
Okay.
Or like as a EP.
Yeah.
And then putting the album out after, but I didn't want to take too much power from the actual release. But what I'll probably end up doing is, I'm thinking about the Bandcamp subscription model, because again, like I was telling you,
yeah,
making music has really helped take my mind off a lot of this stuff. And if I could just keep the meditative practice of like creating shit going and sharing shit going and possibly some sort of a revenue stream from it, or more of an active, you know, making music is sort of like a passive revenue stream at this point, like unless you're touring,
mm-hmm.
You're not really making money off Spotify and all that shit unless you're a certain caliber of artist. But yes, I'm thinking about going Bandcamp subscription model and like putting that shit up and putting up some other cool things and new things and old things and mixes and just opening my studio up to people. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, yeah. Have you found, I don't know. How do I want to pose this to you, sir? It seems like with a lot of the work you're putting out, do you ever find yourself getting better? Because I, as a listener, I feel like there's an evolution over like knowing your work for the past, what, 15 years? I don't know. If that's not, do you find yourself getting better? Because it seems like to me, like, especially I noticed with like You Get What You Pay For, it just seemed to be like a more, you guys in yourself, you know, had like more freedom. Or more, it just seemed like more fluidity with the rhymes and everything like that.
I would say, to borrow a phrase from popular culture, I would say the curve is flattening.
Okay.
All right. That that meaning like, it's definitely getting better, but it's getting better with regards to the spread of abilities and talents. Like, I'm a jack of all trades type of dude. You know what I'm saying? Like this EP, I did the beats and I mixed it and everything. And I've done that before, but before I couldn't do that in a week. And even in doing it within a week, it was still like, there's still areas where I was like, wish I had a little more time with this, but it still comes off. And now it feels like an aesthetic as opposed to just poor mixing, or, you know what I'm saying? Like, it's not poorly mixed, but you know, it's mixed to my ear. Like I had to, I couldn't really like test the mixes. I couldn't blast the music because again we're locked in. So like it's incredibly inconsiderate to like blast mixes at like 6 a.m. or whatever.
Yeah.
But when I say flat on the curve, it's just like okay, well, got to get some cover art, got to get mixes, got to write rhyme, got to make beats. Just learning how to do all those things to the point of execute them to the point of like them being consumer grade, where people want to listen to them, but people won't have to like, where people aren't like, well, what is this and why would you do this? It's just like they get it when you they receive it how it's intended. And also the new Tanya Morgan album, again, like it's that thing also where like when you can focus on a singular talent, that's when it can, that's when you can kind of excel and shine because you put in practice and work. So like the new Tanya Morgan album, I did like a little bit of production on it, but it was just writing. It was just me writing. And I'll say that lyrically, I've played it a few times. Lyrically, it's up there for me. Like my performance lyrically, it's one of those albums where I'm just like, I channeled something, you know what I'm saying? I did something.
And you can tell, you can actually tell, you're like, oh, that was good. Who's that? That guy's good on there.
Absolutely. It's one of those things that's objectively good because, you know, there was a process of like writing and rewriting and editing and restructuring and like doing all that stuff, putting the actual hours and work into making sure that the vocal performances for myself were like next level. You know what I'm saying? There's level and there's next level. And, you know, we as creators, we work on our crafts well enough that we can just be consistently good at a certain level where if Common gets on stage and kicks a freestyle, it's not going to be like this lyrically intricate thing like I used to love, or like his other work. Like he's an amazing lyricist on paper.
Yeah.
But when he kicks a freestyle, you know, you get his spirit and you get his vibe and you get his general, like his general gist.
Yeah.
And it still works. And I think that's what the level is. The level is just wherever you're at as a performer, and the next level is like when you take the time to sit and hone that a little bit. So I would say this is a really long-winded way to say yes, I feel like I'm getting better. But I feel like getting better is like, you know, it's like going to the gym, because there have been times where I've literally not made, I want to say times when I'm not making music, like when I'm not writing or making beats or doing whatever, I'm DJing or working on like the other creative stuff that's not necessarily music, but like marketing or figuring out platforms or doing shit like that. So, you know, like just there's so many positions on the field to play that if I was able to just concentrate singularly on rapping, it would be lights out. I can't front. I'm gonna go ahead and toot my horn.
You have to, because I just noticed, like, because you get what you paid for. Was that 2017 or 2018?
2017, I think.
Okay,
18? I don't know.
Because when I just remember listening to it, just like I was like, fuck. And then I'm trying to, the name of the record escapes me. Forgive me. Because I listened to the Safe EP because I was working from home, social distancing, and then I put on the album. What's the record where you're just like, you don't want to go out, you're just kind of procrastinating, and the beat's like really like, it's almost like a freestyle or free word association. Please,
what you know? Was it on like that?
It's on One Word No Space.
Oh, fuck.
You don't even know. Fuck, this is bad. I just don't want to hit the thing on.
It's at the end of a song, right?
Yeah, I think so.
It's like me and a live. It's at the end of
it's like the beat's like dun, 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 and you're just like,
oh yeah.
What record?
I know exactly what you're talking about. Why can't I can't remember it either. I gotta look it up.
Damn. Cause I'm on, okay, it's not Settle Up.
It is Settle Up. It's at the end of Settle Up.
Okay.
It's at the end of Settle Up because
you waiting for a dollar?
Yeah, yeah, okay. Like that, that kind of, I don't know, for some reason, that kind of becomes even though, like, I'm assuming maybe the production's kind of lo-fi or not as extravagant as some of the other beats, but, like, for me, like, sometimes I can connect with that even more when it was just, like a very, like, I don't know, what was that like for you doing that?
So, that was actually, we were in Paris recording an album and touring and stuff, and like we were at a rehearsal, and it was me, and that's why I'm talking about Flo, and I'm talking about, like, the guy on the keys, his name is Flo, and Vaughn was playing the drums.
Okay.
And I was on the mic, and I just started freestyle. That was all freestyle. That was just me, like, fucking around, rapping,
yeah,
having fun, you know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
And I think I'm a pretty decent freestyler. Mm-hmm. I just never get a chance to do it, you know what I'm saying? Like,
yeah.
I haven't really been doing a lot of shows lately. You know, so in terms of, like, getting to freestyle, I never get to do it. But it's one of those muscles that I just love to exercise when I can. You know what I'm saying? It was super fun to, like, think of things in the moment and, like, kind of, like, I think that I'm trying to remember the exact words in the song, but I know it was just they were waiting for me to do something.
Yeah.
Like, I forget what exactly it was, but I was supposed to be doing something and everybody was kind of waiting on me. And I was,
right.
Procrastinating, you know what I mean?
And that, to me, it just as a listener, you know, it's just my opinion, but it was just like that was like a real compelling moment from the album. Not to say that, you know what I mean? Like, I love the album, but it's just like, ooh, I like that. That was like,
I get you. There's a certain level of humanity to,
yes,
the error, the kind of natural and the instinctual aspects of freestyle, where it just, especially when it's done in a way that's enjoyable. Like, you know, you've heard some bad freestyles or whatever, but
yeah,
when it's done in a way that's like not necessarily, like, I've seen people freestyle and it'll be like this lyrical dexterity thing where you're like, how is he doing that? And
right,
then there's also people that freestyle where it's just like that. It's conversational. It's almost like, oh, this is highly engaging. And I it's relatable in a way. Like,
yeah, I'm sorry.
I think that comes across because it's just that thing where you just, like, I have verses where I've done them, and I made a mistake, and I redid them, and I just can't get the energy or the emotion of the take with the mistake, right? So you got to go with the one with the mistake, because there's no way to. Because again, these are recordings. You're capturing. It's the same as if you're remembering a conversation you have with somebody, like, that's a recording in your mind. You can't capture that again. If they re-say it, you know what I'm saying? Like, so the freestyles just capture the energy of that moment, and if you harness it right, you know what I'm saying, it becomes like this kind of indelible sort of experience that you can't have again, you know?
Yeah, yeah. This is making me think of, like, I had Van Hunt on the show last year, and I was talking to him about it, why sometimes, like, a stripped down version of a song sounds better than when it's, like, you can tell, like, there's so much production in it. And he was just saying, like, maybe it's just because at the base of it, like, you just have a good song, maybe. And then, like, the lyrics work and everything works. And it, and then,
that,
go ahead.
My bad. I didn't mean to cut you off.
No, you didn't.
Oh, I was just going to say, and that's it. You know what I'm saying? Like, I want to learn how to play piano. That's, like, kind of like my next goal is to play piano. But all the songwriters that I know and everybody that, like, the musician instrument playing songwriters, they all just have the same philosophy that if you can play a song with one instrument and it's catchy and it's sticky and if it feels good, that's a hit.
Yeah.
And you can either fuck it up. Like it's not even that's a hit. It's a good song. You can either, you can embellish it to the point where it's uninteresting,
mm-hmm,
or you can like, emphasize the parts that are interesting, but at the base, if it just captures a feeling or an emotion, or it's just like, does it, like, it's the same thing as like using an economy of words. Like, if you can communicate something, the less words it takes to communicate something, the more people connect to it, because the more they can put themselves into the spaces that don't exist. You know what I'm saying? Into the spaces. So, you know, if I'm like saying I love you is way more effective than saying, you know, like, well, I've been thinking about when me and you met, but like that shit don't matter. Just tell the person you love.
Yeah,
that was a poor example, but you get me.
I know what you mean. Yeah, no, it's one of those things where it's just like, and I think for me, it's just kind of a taste thing where it's like, when it's like stripped down, it's like, oh fuck yeah, this is a little more real. And I think that's why I just wanted to highlight that moment in that album, One Word, No Space, by Don Will.
I appreciate that, because that's one of those things where like, I think you might be the first person that ever brought it up.
Oh, wow. Okay.
And it's one of those things where like that moment in specific was one of my favorites. Cause again, like it was such a time, like such a good time in life. We were in Paris for like a month doing music and touring and doing shows and shit. And it was just, you know, like, and putting together the record, like I make voice notes on my phone a lot. I record a lot of stuff and a lot of those like sounds to use as inspiration later when I remember when I'm uninspired or bored. But I stumbled across those notes and I'm like, y'all, I need a context to share this with people, because I enjoy it enough that I want other people to enjoy it. But if I just post it on Instagram without a video or about, like, you know what I'm saying? You got to think, I always am thinking of how people will best receive the things that I make.
Yeah.
And I'm starting to get a better handle on Instagram, mainly because I've been trying to figure out using Instagram specifically as the platform for my music and not necessarily for like Twitter is jokes. Cool.
Mm-hmm.
Get it. You know what I'm saying? Like Twitter is more strongly like words and still images and sometimes video, but Instagram is such a media rich platform and dynamic that you can really go crazy up there. And I just want to make sure I'm doing it correctly, not even doing it correctly, but doing it in a way that maximizes the platform for me.
Right.
Yeah. So,
and then I kind of want to circle back to like that abandoned mall. I think maybe the first time you were on, like, God, that would have been years ago, but we're just talking about like malls and like the dwindling. We don't see them anymore, or if we see them, they're just relics, like of a time gone by. How did that make you feel when you saw it, when you were inside that mall for the first time after not being there for a while?
It freaked me out, man. Like,
yeah,
I mean, like that mall was the mall where I spent my entire high school. I worked there at a certain point, you know what I'm saying? Like I had a job at the arcade when we would go there and just hang out, talk to girls and shit, or like you would get dressed up to go to the mall. Like that was the thing. You know what I'm saying? And like, so, hey, I mean, I don't have the same relationship to the city or to the spaces as I used to, mainly because I've moved so much of my life so much of my life exists outside of Cincinnati now. Like,
yeah,
I live in Brooklyn. My daughter lives in Virginia. My mom and them still live in Cincinnati, but you know what I'm saying? Like they're, again, like spaces and places change, but it was almost like visiting a grave site, if you will. You know what
I'm
saying?
Yeah. Of your like, childhood or some shit. Yeah.
Yeah. Cause a lot of those, like, you know, I'm in my 40s, man. So a lot of those memories don't come back unless I have a strong visual reminder or somebody mentions it.
Mm-hmm.
And that was like a visceral thing. It was deeper than just being like, remember we used to go to Oak Tree and buy hoodies and jeans and shit. And then we would go sit at the food court. And then sometimes we'd sneak in the movie. That was literally like, oh, this is the store I used to go buy shoes from. And now it's gone.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like,
that means I could be gone too. I will be gone. Yeah. Fuck yeah, dude.
Exactly.
Yeah,
and then you know, it brought larger questions into play, like the way that space is used, and the way that, you know what I'm saying, companies and the way that companies in the city treat public spaces and stuff. Like, it's still a public space, and people still use it. It's just accessed differently now. So like the arcade that I used to work at, like a big amusement park within the mall. They had like an arcade. They had rides and all this shit. I used to work on the ride side.
Yeah, okay.
Now that arcade has become a video game store. Like one dude opened a video game store in the mall, and he named it Time Out after the arcade that used to exist.
Yes.
And now he just kind of sells video games and sells consoles and sells actual arcade machines, and he also does video game tournaments there. And you know what I'm saying? Like the video game tournament, I did a bunch of talking to some of the people there, but the few people that were there, but the video game tournaments tend to draw like a decent enough crowd.
Yeah.
And he's also hosted live events. Like if I'm not mistaken, Mega Ran performed, my friend Mega Ran, who's a rapper, he performed there because he does a lot of video game chiptune stuff musically.
Yeah.
So his fan base are gamers. So he would go there and perform, but like, it's just strange to see how drastically it changed, but it's also kind of interesting to see how it's adapting, because you know, it's one thing if it's gone altogether. It's like, damn, this is gone. Like when Von comes to Brooklyn and sees City Point Alamo Draft House, and he's like, like he was just like, yo man, he has an interlude on his album where Big Daddy Kane's talking to Combat Jack about Albee Square Mall doesn't exist, and that's where he met Bismarck, and he can't take his kids to show his kids where he met Bismarck.
Damn.
Like, that's different than being like, oh, the same mall that I used to work at is now just gutted. Like, I can still walk my children into there and show them the places, but it's just not the same. It doesn't resonate the same, you know?
Yeah, it's an interesting thing, because I remember the I think my like PG County has changed a lot. Like where the area where I grew up in, like we finally have like a big strip mall that has a BJ's and a like a Sonic. We've got a Popeyes and all this stuff, and it's good because there's people there. Like there's people that have jobs and people are buying stuff. I mean, hopefully, you know, obviously we're doing this podcast as if we're getting through this bullshit. You know what I mean? So
yeah.
So it's just like, because back then we had the strip mall, but we used to have to go to the good mall. We had to go to like Charles County, or we had to go to like go down to Charles County Waldorf, or go to like Pentagon City or Tyson's Corner. I don't know if you know those, but you have affiliations with the area.
I know those places. So, I'm an area vet.
Yeah, you know? That's an assumption that I just kind of figured anyway that you knew. But we would go there, and now like my parents don't have to go that far. They go to the BJ's or whatever, and you know, we've got a Dave and Buster's now. So it's like, oh, we're kind of coming up. But if you go to some of these old malls, like I was in Atlantic City, and this area called Maze Landing, it's like a vestige of the old days where you do have this mall and you have the Auntie Anne's or whatever, and you got these different places where it's just like this. It kind of seems archaic.
Yeah, you know, it's a lot of that is just about being adaptable and also convenience. Like,
yeah,
the need for malls and those public spaces has changed drastically with Amazon and all these other like places. Funny enough, part of the reason why that mall still exists, Forest Fair Mall, or Cincinnati Mills is also called, used to call it Forest Fair, but part of the reason why it exists is because there was a huge Big Lots. It was like, you know, I don't know.
I know Big Lots. Yeah.
Yeah. The middle of the country, middle America knows Big Lots.
Mm-hmm.
And like, it's not really big in New York, I don't think, but so this is like a Big Lots mega store.
Mm-hmm.
It was like the size of a Walmart or a Target.
Yeah.
Like, well, the parts of the video where like we're rapping and we're like, there's like a big flag above us.
Mm-hmm.
That was like the checkout for Big Lots, like the right outside the checkout. The Big Lots is boarded up, but that's all Amazon fulfillment now.
Wow.
So I think Amazon pretty much just is slowly encroaching on that mall and taking over space within it, because you know what I'm saying, like, when you go outside, it's a bunch of Amazon trucks. And at one point, the day before the shoot, I did go scouting and I did go to like look and just see what areas I wanted to highlight in the video and shoot and film, and I was taking reference photos.
Yeah.
And like a dude walked up and was like, hey, what are you doing? You can't take film in here. And I was like, I'm just taking pictures with my camera. He was like, I need you to delete those pictures. And I'm like, it's just me taking photos on a phone. He was like, I know, but people come in here all the time and film stuff and do like abandoned mall videos, and I don't like the way it's portrayed. And I'm just like, oh no, this is just, and I had to like lay it on him, like, man, I used to work here. This is like me visiting my childhood right now. I'm not thinking about you or YouTube or anybody other than the fact that like this place, this is tripping me out, and I need documented proof when I go back to New York that I can look at. I mean, I was kind of lying because I was absolutely.
But it did make him fall back, though, right?
Yeah, it made him fall back because you know, like there were the area that he caught me taking a picture of was I didn't feature it in the video because I figured I didn't want to get pinged again. But
yeah,
it was the food court area, and that's where the mall security, the mall security that still exists there is like two security guards. But that's where they work. It's like a police substation there too. And while I would have loved to film the food court, because again, like the spot in the video where the escalators are, where I'm walking in black and white, like that's the food court area. And like, again, like, the food court is the best part of the mall, man. That's where you rock your fit to go to the food court.
I'm watching it now. I got it on mute now. Yeah.
Yeah. Like you at the food court, that's where like everybody hanging out. It's a communal area.
It's a
like
cool
cafeteria at school.
Yeah. It's like a cool fucking I don't know what this is about me. And I mean, you're from the Midwest, so maybe you can speak on it, but it just seems like, I mean, I spent 5 years living in Chicago. And I don't know, man. It's just something about the Midwest that I love, and I don't know what that energy is, because like I've been to Cleveland, like, you know, Minnesota for a little bit, but and I maybe it was because I was watching Detroiters. Have you ever seen that on Comedy Central?
Nah, I got rid of Sling right before it debuted, so I couldn't see it.
Okay, to me, it's the funniest show I've seen in the last ten years.
It looks like such a honest show, like an honest depiction of that city and like the people in Detroit.
Yeah,
like it from the few clips that I've seen. Like that's what I really liked about it, and why I'm really upset that I can't watch it. It just feels like, oh, these are just Detroit. This is just people from Detroit who. It almost feels like you watch somebody's Instagram live or some shit. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I bought it on like on Google Play, like the two seasons. It's like I paid, it's like $16.90. I think I paid $40 for you get 20 episodes or whatever. But and maybe if you have the Comedy Central app, I think you can do it that way. But I said, I'm just going to fucking buy it because I've been circling around it for so long. Anyway, it just has this vibe of like hard work, work ethic. You know, you always get the flyover states, you get that bullshit and stuff, but I still just always get this stuff about like hard work. There's an honesty to it. You know what I mean? I don't know. What the hell am I saying? See, I was good 20 minutes ago in the podcast with words, but now I'm trying to wrap my brain around what that means to me. And I think my time in the Midwest helped me here in New York, you know, just by like learning my craft, really dedicating myself to it. And then shit, that's kind of fucked up taking it elsewhere, you know?
Well, and that's the thing that, so with the Cincinnati video releasing, like it reconnected me to a lot of people in Cincinnati who I just had lost touch with, like local artists and other people who, you know what I'm saying? Like if I was still on the ground locally, we would be collaborating. Absolutely. Or we would just at least be in touch. Absolutely. But you know, algorithms and regionality kind of remove you from people who aren't in your proximity.
Right.
And the video kind of reconnected me in a way, and it reconnected me into the city in a way that a bunch of people who I hadn't talked to in years, or I had never met before, were just like, yo. And that's one thing that I really wanted. I've been wanting for a long time, is just like get back in touch with the Midwest and get back in touch with Cincinnati in general and people who are doing things there. Like whenever I talk to Ilias, whenever I go home and we hang out, I'm just like, man, tell me about the locals, like local music shit. Like who should I be checking for? What's going on here? Whatever, whatever. Mainly because like local music scenes are the most vibrant parts of the music industry. I mean, granted, the bigger artists are the ones who tend to garner the most attention because
right.
they have the most resources, they have the most polish, they have the most whatever. No, not even most polish, the most resources. But it's the lifeblood of the music industry are like the person who does like a residency at the little bar around the corner, or like the singer who does shows at the coffee shop. Like that's the music industry that matters most to me.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? That's my music industry. There are several music industries and I've operated in a bunch of them. I landed in like this one, and by all means, it's my favorite one. It's the one that like there's a burnout in every one you get to. Like I would imagine the burnout, the higher up you go, is more drastic. Like I was listening to a podcast with this artist LaDonis. I don't know if you remember. He was on Fool's Gold.
Okay.
And he was kind of big around like the 2009, I think.
Okay.
But he just left. Like he just left the industry. He was on tour with Bruno Mars, opening for Bruno Mars for a little while.
Wow.
He just left. You know. Yeah, like in the podcast he was just saying how he still was very much involved in music and does things, but he just chose to do other things. It was just like, you know, I just, whatever his path to his own enlightenment was, it led him away from music. And in a large way, you know, like that, I lost track of what I was saying.
Burnout, the higher you get in the industry.
And like, again, like I've experienced burnout. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, I know I seem to be a fairly active artist releasing music and doing X, Y, and Z, but like I was saying earlier, I have the benefit of working within a group and within a collective and across several media. So if my burnout looks different, like if I can put together an EP in a week, I can ostensibly put together a project relatively quickly. If I don't make music for 6 to 7 months, nobody would know because Tanya Morgan's making music or Legendary is making music, mm-hmm. or there's a video I'm promoting, there's something. But you know, like it's just that thing where I don't really consider it burnout as much as I do like a hard reset. Sometimes you just gotta stop.
Yeah,
just stop. And that's just how my mind works. And I think that for some people the point where you stop is the point where you push through and like you achieve some other level. But for me it just feels like need to take a break sometimes, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, dude. Well, I guess I kind of want to circle back again to like, how do you feel like when we talk about you evolving as an MC, how does that correlate to you being involved in the stand-up comedy world? Because I know people always in the comedy community in New York especially, because I know like a lot of my comedian colleagues, my friends, we make that comparison to hip hop all the time. How does it relate on your end, do you think? Or how has it helped you? How has it like opened you up?
For me, it's connected me more to the vulnerability of the art form. I think that the thing that I admire most about comedians and about comedy is that like a lot of the thoughts and a lot of the jokes and a lot of like the bits are just about like the most fragile parts of their personalities and all that shit. You know what I'm saying?
So yeah.
Like, they're getting up there and exposing. You guys are getting up there and exposing yourselves in ways that, you know, I just thought of a really horrible Louis C.K. thing.
Oh well, but, it's fine.
I was gonna say not exposing yourself like Louis C.K.
I know what you mean. Sure, joke. Of course.
Yeah, but but just getting up there and exposing like the really just kind of like vulnerability and like the things about yourself that other people will relate to, but other people probably aren't brave enough to share with a room full of strangers. And furthermore, trying to make it relatable and address it in a way that like helps, it's therapeutic too. So, you know what I'm saying? Like, it's not just a joke about not being accepted by your parents for your gender, for your sexuality, or for your career choices. It's more or less just kind of like a rumination on why humans tend to not necessarily like it's more or less just like an analysis of the state of society. You know what I'm saying? Like,
yeah.
It's always a deeper level to everything. Even innocuous seeming things or even things that don't necessarily feel like they have another level to them. There's always a level to them.
Sure.
And that's the thing about comedy, is that you can see the levels, you know what I'm saying? Like, even, and I love it. And it's just also made me a little bit more, just a little bit more willing. I got to back up real quick. The other thing that it's done for me is that the thing about music and the thing about creating music for people, that you always need a, like music, you feel like you need a crowd.
Mm-hmm.
You feel like you need somebody to perform to. Like, performing is important. In front of people is important. But with comedy, it can be 10 people. Like, a shitty room is a shitty room. But as long as there's somebody to help you get the thoughts out and shape them and form them in a way that you can present them to other audiences, music is always, for me, felt like, if it's not a big crowd, I don't want to do it, man. It was only 10 people at the show, whatever, whatever. But that's kind of like defeating the purpose of sharing the art to make it better. Like, comedy is about just sharing it so that you can shape it.
Yeah.
Music is about approaching it in a way like, it's, no, it's shaped already. I just want to show you guys what I made.
Mm-hmm.
And if you don't have a bunch of people to show, you kind of feel defeated. Whereas in comedy, it's like, well, there are only 5 people here, but let's do this, 'cause I need some feedback on these things.
Yeah, that's true.
You're not really looking for feedback in music so much as you're looking for praise or approval.
Yeah,
and I think that in comedy you get to that level, like when you have like a recorded album, or you have like a set that you know kills everywhere. But even then, like, I just think it's interesting that it's reversed, that at least in hip hop anyway. In music, a lot of times you record the stuff and it's this rigid form when you present it, versus comedy, it's growing and changing and evolving every time you do it. And the thing that comedy kind of brought to my music making is that it's like, okay, don't take the song so seriously as you're making them, and when you do perform them, give them space to evolve. So the few, I haven't really done that many shows around my solo stuff, but the few that I have done, it's pretty much just like, I wouldn't call it musical comedy because I'm definitely up there rapping and shit, but
yeah,
you know, like I just don't treat the stage the same. Like, I treat the stage now like almost like a comedian would. It's loose. It isn't just me getting up there to be like, look at this, I made this, you motherfuckers gonna enjoy this.
Yeah.
But like, hey, how are you guys doing? Do you guys feel like hearing some shit? If you do, we can do it. Otherwise, what do we can do with it? You want to get up on stage with me and show me something? I don't care. Like, it's more loose and free and chaotic in a way that I can control, and it makes it more enjoyable for me. You know what I'm saying? And I think the crowds tend to enjoy it as well.
Yeah, we do, bro. Yeah, that's good. So what are you doing to cope, other than making your dope beats and rhymes? What are you doing to cope through this time?
That's a good question, man. I am talking to people
more.
Phone calls, what's the word I'm looking for here? Video chats, but reluctant video chats. I'm not a video.
Why do people want to do video chats?
Man, I don't know.
Is it maybe like family stuff, or I could see that.
There have been birthday hangs on video chat and shit like that.
Okay.
But like, how do you end a video chat? Like, I don't know how to, it's just such a harsh communication. It's like you're jamming your face into my day with a phone. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, furthermore, I have the responsibility of holding the phone and staring at it. Like, if we were hanging out, I don't got to look at you. I can feel your presence and your energy and see you there.
Yeah.
But if we're on video chat, I have to hold the phone so you can see me. I can see you. And we can't break eye contact. If we do, it gets weird and I forget you're on the phone. But so my daughter sent the video chat. Like, she'll just sit the phone down and look at it every few seconds or every few minutes.
Yeah.
And in a weird way, I thought it was like, why do y'all do that? It drives me crazy. But now I kind of get it. Because it's not even about seeing the people. It's about just, okay, you're here with me now.
Cool. Okay.
You know what I'm saying?
Right, like, right.
And that I think the majority of adults would be annoyed and frustrated if you video chatted them and didn't look at them. You know mm-hmm. what I'm saying? Like,
yeah.
But I tried to go live on Instagram today just to thank people for, like, copping the EP or whatever, because I understand it. Times are tough. Everybody ain't got no money. And you right. Give me some money. I appreciate it. But even doing that, it was like, I'm looking at my own self-talk. Like, I'm just talking to myself. And now I'm distracted by these scrolling comments. It's just sensory overload that I have to figure out how to adjust to. You know
sure. Yeah. Well, that's understandable.
How have you been coping? Have you been...
doing this.
Have you been in these streets?
Podcast. Yeah, been to the store. I really didn't start for... I haven't been out since, I want to say, Wednesday. And...
Oh, yeah. Outside at all. You've been in the house the whole time. Not, you didn't step outside for fresh air or anything?
I don't think I... Have I? Fuck, I don't even know if I... No, I have to take the trash out. So, yeah. But I think I'm just trying to stay away as much as possible. And, you know, you get the whole artist thing being like reclusive and stuff. Everybody's tweeting that, you know, the self distancing. I've been doing that. This has been waiting. I've been waiting for this my whole life, you know. But yeah, I'll probably have to go to the store in a few days, but I'm not wanting for anything. I want to do laundry. I think I'll do that. And I've watched a bunch of movies. They're catching up on TV shows and stuff like that.
I'll probably need to get into some sort of exercise routine very soon, because this is
I need to do that
not
too.
Great. I feel like we're all going to leave quarantine 50 pounds heavier.
Well, I don't need to get there. I've been doing less of the snacks that I like. I've stayed away from them. Although
What's the one snack you can't have in your house?
Well, I talked about that a couple episodes ago. It's Oreo cookies and milk. I've never tried heroin, but when you get that soggy cookie and that milk, oh my God, dude. Wow.
Like for me, it's just anything. My snack game tends to be, I tend to keep a lot of like fruit in the house, because I like fruity candy.
Okay.
And instead of eating the fruity candy, I tend to just eat the actual fruit. You know what I'm saying? But
yeah,
the other thing is cookies and like cookies and shit like that. I usually go outside and buy them if I want them.
Right.
To make sure that I don't have a surplus.
Mm-hmm.
And I did them. I went to get some Lysol the other day, and they didn't. Like, I ended up buying like a thing of a carton of marshmallow, chocolate covered marshmallow Easter eggs.
Oh shit! Okay.
And I would eat one a day, like on some, just like, oh, I needed something sweet. Last night I took an edible and I was watching the fucking CJ Walker thing.
How is it?
And I remember. We'll get to that in a second.
Okay, let's do. Okay. Okay.
I got the car and the eggs. Like, I remembered I had them. I'm sitting there high and I just started eating them and shit, eating them. And I was like, this is why you can't have them, because I literally sat and ate eight marshmallow covered eggs at 2 a.m.
Oh my God. Like, oh, no.
But. Yeah. Also, I had a root canal on Monday.
Oh,
and
shit.
I was supposed to go get a crown yesterday, but my dentist canceled it. So, you know, they put that temporary
elective surgery and stuff like that. Oh, shit. No, I never had that.
So when you get a root canal, they do the root canal, and then they put a crown over the tooth sometimes.
Uh-huh.
If the tooth is bad enough. My tooth was falling the fuck apart, so I had to get a crown. And the temporary filling she put in my mouth is completely falling out. So I have half a tooth in the back of my head.
And
depending on what I have to be really careful when I chew, or I might slice my jaw open. And
fuck.
Yeah, shit is wild. Shit is wild out here, nigga. Wild. But,
oh my God, dude.
I got a root canal the first, like when quarantine started.
Yeah.
But I'm fine. But CJ Walker. So, listen, man. I tend to, how do I?
I gotta
preface this by saying, I don't publicly trash people's stuff, or not even trash, not okay. trash. I don't publicly. I'm not hypercritical of people's stuff publicly because I understand there's an audience for everything, and
sure.
unless it's overwhelmingly bad, there's no need for me to be like, "Oh, this wasn't great."
Okay,
but.
Oh boy!
That match with CJ Walker shit was a mess. Man. It was some fucking mess. It was.
Oh no!
It was. First of all, I was watching it and I kept thinking, like, what was the pitch for this thing? Like, because it feels like what's the movie with the Octavia Spencer movie with the scientist? The scientist.
Shit scientist.
With Janelle Monáe.
Oh, Hidden Figures.
It feels like Hidden Figures meets Girls Trip meets...
What?
Hidden Figures meets Girls Trip meets the movie that Oprah did, the fantasy movie that Oprah and Ava did.
It's
if those three movies came into one movie, because, like, first of all...
wow.
And then, like, the other thing is I can't stop thinking about Octavia as Ma, so... Because Ma was just, it was such a that role stuck with me. And whenever she talks and reacts to people on screen, I'm like, oh, she about to kill y'all, dude. She about to murder one of y'all.
Oh, my God.
Perfect example is there's a scene where... Oh, and it felt like Lifetime and Tyler Perry. It's all this shit mixed together. It's a lot going on. So like, they have these weird flashback scenes. Like sometimes she sees like ghosts, and they have to speed. They use these devices to speed the plot along, obviously, and like kind of like tell a story or whatever exposition. But it just doesn't. It's like ham-fisted and they're shoehorning this information to you. Like, and
wow.
I don't know how to explain it properly, but it's just. There was just a lot of unnecessary exposition and a lot of unnecessary shit in the movie. And then I went and Googled, and it's just like, I can't tell if it's this. I can't tell if it's the story of the Wook Addy, her story or CJ's story. It's just so fucking weird. I recommend watching it. I'll say that.
It's only like 4 episodes, right?
4 episodes, so like 4 hours. You know what I'm saying? I watched it all last night. I'm at the point in my life now where I watch something all at once and then I walk away from it. Because if I have to watch it in bits and pieces, I won't go back to it.
See,
but the one thing I did.
Yeah, go ahead.
I was going to say the one thing I watched that I gave really high marks to that I really, really enjoyed was Hentified?
Yeah, I know what you're talking about.
That shit was fire.
Is it in good subtitles?
Some parts of it are. Like, sometimes they'll just bust out the Spanglish on you know what I'm saying? And you just don't know what's happening. Like, but it's
Where does that take fire. Place? What's in it LA. About? Oh, so it's an L.A. show.
It's an L.A. show about a family business, a little taco spot, and...
Of course.
owned by like a grandfather and his grandson. One grandson is like a kind of like a street savvy dude who is the one who sticks around and helps his family out the most. Mm-hmm. The other one is like a white identifying Latinx cat who
sure
is trying to like get a claim in the culinary art world and shit. And then for some reason or the other, they both end up needing to run the taco spot in their grandfather's absence.
Mm.
And it's about the white identifying guy kind of rediscovering his roots in a way.
Okay.
But so the way that it's written and the way that it's shot and the way that like the characters are considered, it feels like it feels complete. Like, okay. You know what I'm saying? Like, and it feels like they really sat with it and made a show that has like a aesthetic. What's that woman? America
Ferreira?
Yeah, her. I think she's involved in it. And I think she executive produced it. I know she pops up on the episode. I'm pretty sure that's her. If I'm wrong, it's not racism. It's that I don't remember names or faces that well. So
okay, I'm gonna add it to my queue. I did see it. I think I've seen people. Some of my Latinx brothers and sisters on social media talk about it. So I'm gonna
But nigga, my nigga, you gotta watch that CJ Walker shit. I'm telling you, there's a scene with a bike. I was dying at 2 a.m. Like, it's arbitrary as fuck. Like, they don't explain what the fuck is happening. It's just one, like there's a ghost of a child is riding a bike around. And then she's just like, I'm going to ride the bike too. And she gets she finds a bike and she rides it off. I can't tell if it's, they use so many different, it's like comedy, it's drama.
Yeah.
Tiffany Haddish is in it, and she's very Tiffany Haddish, which if you're a Tiffany Haddish fan, it's fine. But it's also like they put her in a dramatic role, which she's not comedians can do drama. You know what I'm saying? She's learning how to do the drama thing. It's just an interesting film. And also when I found out that LeBron and Maverick were executive producers on it.
Okay.
It started to make sense.
Well, you know, I like Tiffany Haddish. I mean, this movie that she did, Like a Boss, obviously people were, it's 19% on Rotten Tomatoes. I don't think that's fair, but I saw that movie and my listeners know that I'm an AMC Stubbs member, so when I go see a movie, I have that, you know, I can see 3 movies a week for like $20 a month, whatever. And I don't take that hit. The stakes aren't that high when I go to a movie like this. So when I look at this movie before I go in, I'm like 19%, and I go in there and I have a good time. I'm like, I don't think it's a bad movie. I had fun.
Yeah.
But with
I don't check ratings out. I check out trailers and see how I feel about things.
Yeah.
I don't dislike Tiffany Haddish. I'm actually a Tiffany Haddish fan.
Yeah.
I like Tiffany Haddish. I like her overall. But I will say that it's just when I see her name in the credits of a thing, it kind of shapes my perception of what the thing is.
I
know that, like, you bring Tiffany Haddish onto a project for Tiffany Haddish. It's not like she's going to transform into a new role. You know what I'm saying? She's going to be Tiffany Haddish. And that's not a drawback at all. Like if it's intentional, it just makes the project stronger. But if it's a misfit for the project, it puts more focus on her not necessarily, on her herness not necessarily being the right fit. I will say, like, her role in this was more of the comic relief, so it fit. You know what I'm saying? Like, she was and it wasn't buffoonery. It wasn't like she was on there, like, being, like, extra Tiffany. But it was just that whenever she came on screen, you kind of expected to get some sort of a laugh. You know what I'm saying? But also, she would also hit you with the curveballs of, like, really emotional stuff. And she did decent in the emotional stuff. It just, I'm speaking specifically to a scene where, like, everybody had their crying scene.
Okay.
And when it came to Tiffany's crying scene, she couldn't find the tears. And it was just a lot of, like, wincing and shit. It was interesting.
Oh, boy. And
but
the views of Don Will do not reflect the views of Chris Lamberth or the Mundane Festival podcast. Tiffany Haddish was a former scene partner of mine, and I think she's very talented.
I know that's your girl. Tiffany, I love you. If you're listening to this, Tiffany, I love you. And also, single too, Tiffany, I love you for real. You know what I'm saying? If you're listening to this, a nigga out here, I feel like we kind of match. We're compatible in a way. You know what I'm saying? Chris got my information.
Yep.
I'll get off Tinder. I'll get off Tinder. I'll get off Raya. I'll get off all the maps.
You're on Raya, huh?
I am on the, I riot up.
You are a celebrity. How is that?
It is stupid.
It's stupid.
It is a waste of, you got to pay to be on it. The only reason I'm on it is because a while ago, Wyatt was like, my friend Wyatt told me about it. He sent me like a link about
Wyatt Cenac, like, very talented comedian, actor, producer, writer. Gave me my first full weekend at Caroline's. Very nice man.
Oh, word. Yeah. I'm pretty sure he's not on it, but he sent me a link about it because I used to go over his house and do this thing where I would hook my phone up to his Apple TV and we would all swipe my Tinder account together and laugh.
Wow.
It was that thing for people who aren't on Tinder to experience Tinder. I was like, yeah, my Tinder. I'm not going to talk to half these people I match up with anyway. It don't fucking matter. But, and then like he sent me a link, like, here's a new dating app to try if you can get in. And then like I tried, they wouldn't let me in. Then they sent me an email a couple months later, like, yo, we need niggas to monetize this thing. Yo, if you still trying to rock.
Oh, absolutely. Man.
So I signed up. And I guess.
Is it all white girls?
No.
Okay, that's good. Not that there's anything wrong with white girls. I like them. Some of them are nice.
They're fantastic.
Oh, fuck, shit. I like white girls, okay? My listeners know I like white girls. I like them so much that they don't think I like black ones. And I probably I probably shouldn't have said black ones. Black women.
I want to go on record and say, as a guy who's known Chris for several years, Chris likes women. He likes black, white, brown,
Cuban or Asian.
Beige.
I've got my heart broken by all colors of the spectrum, so I don't think I discriminate.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, so that we've cleaned that up.
There's a nice sampling of all racial makeups on there.
Oh, that's good.
The thing about Raya that's interesting to me is that, like, you can't figure out if it's just like an industry mixer or people trying to fuck. I don't know what's going on there.
Oh, okay.
Because like it'll be your name, and then it's got like your Instagram handle, and then it's got like your industry, and then like a brief thing. Yeah. And so you get a couple social swipes, and then it says, well, Raya is a community about creating meaningful, lasting connections. So focus on the connections that you have now. Go talk to the people who you have on your messages. You can still go to the networking side of the app. So there's a whole other side of the app that's just like, it's just networking. So it's you gotta go to dating apps. You get to pick your gender and all that shit you want to see.
Yeah.
The social side is just everybody. It's just niggas and it's everybody in that motherfucker hanging out. It'll be like Brad with fucking boom mic. Like, I work in film.
Yeah.
And like you can swipe right on that motherfucker and be like, yo, I make music. I need some videos. Let's do it.
Oh. But
it just feels weird to have that level of inclusivity in your dating app.
That's a bit much.
I think Raya is more so a connectivity. I think they brand themselves as a connectivity app more than like a dating app. Because even when you on the dating side, it feels more like, well, even if you guys don't match romantically, you can maybe do some work together.
Cause yeah,
these are all. And the other thing is, it's definitely not. It's just a bunch of influencers. It ain't like some famous. I haven't seen any famous people. That's the other reason why I signed up. I was like, man, maybe I'll see like a famous person.
Yeah.
I only saw one famous person. I don't remember. Oh, this might be dry snitching, but whatever. The woman from the woman who she was like a news correspondent, and she ended up working on the Bernie campaign as like a press person. Like the low. She has like a low haircut with a part. I think she was on CNN a lot, the black woman.
And she's cute?
She's cute. Yeah, she's cute.
I think I know who you're talking about.
Yeah, I'll send you a link when I find it. But she also is in a relationship. So
shit. Oh.
Like, but again, like that's that thing where I think it's less about, you know, also with dating apps, like when some people, you get in a relationship, you just they forget that you're on there. You got to go delete your profile. Otherwise, you're still popping up.
Well, let's just say that she forgot that she's on there.
Yeah, yeah, it's clear she has. It's clear.
Yeah.
It's very clear she has. Like, she's not, you can't tell if people are active on there, but. So I've been beginning my days by just looking at those apps, just to look at them, to see people.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's my people watching.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like, I don't really necessarily do anything. I just kind of be on there just to be on there. I'm trash. I'm wasting your time. Waste your time. 2020 is my whole modus operandi with the dating apps.
Yeah,
and
I tried for like a weekend and I got scared. I matched with a girl and then she on Bumble. And then she, a black girl actually, but then she didn't hit me up, so I don't know.
Yeah, that's the thing about dating apps. They get really, it starts to feel dumb. Even when you match with people and even when you like, it just feels like a waste of everybody's time in a way.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like chatting them up and shit, it's just stupid. So, again, like I'm only on there just to be nosy because I'm fucking bored.
Yeah.
I'm not looking for anything. Right. I'm not on that motherfucker. Like, yo, what's up, babe? You TF?
Yeah.
Do this thing.
I feel you, man.
But yeah, I mean, Tiffany Haddish, you can shut this shit down, though. I just want you to know.
You risk it all for her.
Risk it all.
I think she might be dating Common, man.
I thought it was somebody else.
Well, I saw something when I looked her up. It said something like Tina Knowles might confirm that Tina Knowles possibly confirms Tiffany Haddish and Common relationship.
Yeah, I don't like them as a couple, man. I'm gonna just say it. I like Common. I like Tiffany Haddish. I don't like them as a couple. And I'm not saying this is a person who is interested in Tiffany Haddish.
Oh, you're just saying as a hater.
Yeah. I don't approve of love. Yeah, 19 hours ago, Madame Noir said Tiffany Haddish says she and Common are just friends.
Okay. Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Tiffany, we back, baby. Tiffany, we back. I need you to name this podcast Tiffany Haddish. Don wants a or Tiffany.
I don't know, Don man. I see up. This Instagram post. When is this from? Tiffany, happy birthday to my friend Common. Love that you are willing to go on Groupon adventures with me. Paint and pour plus food. I don't know about this, dude. Let's see how long ago this was. Let me deep dive. The neighborhood.
You can go on like a Groupon date. It's fine.
Yeah, I'm not gonna try to ruin that for you, man. Because I hate when I see celebrities, women that I like, and they're fucking dating somebody else.
Now, you know what I mean? But I will say this. I'll forever hold a torch for...
Sure. I get it.
For dude. Tracee Ellis Ross. It's Tracee Ellis
Well,
Ross.
She don't... Does she have somebody?
If she does, he's like Stedman, and we don't know.
Yeah, she keeps
if
him...
She has any, I'm pretty sure she's very committed to herself and her career and her family. I think that her relationship, I don't think she has space for romantic love. I think she has space for just love. You know what I'm saying? Like,
yeah.
She hasn't decided to be romantic with anybody in any recent memory. But you, I will say this about Tracy.
Okay.
I remember she really freaked out about Brad Pitt, like, noticing her. And I know Brad Pitt is a hunky white man, but he's a white man. And I have there's nothing wrong with
whoa
nothing wrong with
that is at Don wrong. Will.
There's nothing wrong with that. There's nothing wrong with that. I believe that love is love, and I believe you can love who you love. But I'm just saying, Tracy, you got to come back to the original Asiatic black man. You know what I'm saying? You got to come back to square one. I'll be waiting for you holding this torch.
The way that I can cover you by saying this, this will be our Hotep moment, our Hotep hat moment. So the audience, I've done this a couple times too. I would put my Hotep hat on and then I say like Hotep things. So I'm covering you in this in case, because one, because I still want to get on SNL. So so I don't get canceled, I will say, you know, certain things. And because, you know, maybe you could, you and I could still have a chance to get on SNL. Maybe you could be a part of my Black Lonely Island team. So I want to make sure that you're safe, just to make sure you're safe.
I didn't tell you what I was doing. I was working on my Dr. Umar Riggs bit.
Okay, so, see, that's what we're doing. That's what we're doing now.
This was a whole. I was gonna roll. I was rolling it out slowly. I was gonna do the whole. If the Queen wants to meet me in White Plains at Cheesecake Factory for a lovely dinner, you know what I'm saying? I was gonna get some real Dr. Umar Riggs deep cuts in there. Donations, gifts. Type of shit, but
the White Plains cheese. Why don't you just go to Jersey's closer? The one near me is closer than White Plains, is it?
That was deep cut. Dr. Umar, you didn't see that video where he was like,
no,
he was like,
oh, he's in New York.
He was in New York for a conference. He was in his hotel room in White Plains. He was putting on like aftershave and cologne. He was just like, he was like, ladies, any lovely lady that wants to meet me. For a lovely date in White Plains at the Cheesecake Factory. If you want to, any queens want to partake with the prince, like type shit.
Oh, wow. I wonder if anybody showed up.
No, I don't think so. But I don't understand. So the thing about him, too, is that why does he repeat everything so much? Like, he says everything three times. He'll be like, Black man. The time has come for us. Like, it's just like this weird cadence that he does.
Yeah.
Where everything is in triplets.
Do they like him? Do women like him?
No. I won't say no, but I don't. I think it's a specific type of woman.
Yeah.
Listen, I don't want to say what I'm going to say because you might lose a listener there. Just put a stock in it.
You know what? Say what you want to say.
This is a way of putting it. I think Umar preys on people's insecurities about their race and about their personality.
Mm.
So I feel like if there was any woman who fell in line with whatever he was saying, she would probably be one that, like, just like any male, they're probably people who aren't necessarily that secure in their own identity,
right?
And because he identifies so strongly as what he is, I don't understand people that listen to him. I don't understand people that subscribe to his philosophy. So like, he's just kind of an idiot, and also he's getting so much burn lately.
Yeah,
has quarantine just kind of made us susceptible to Umar?
Yeah, I haven't watched too much of his. I vaguely know who he is, and he's kind of a dick. That's all I know.
He's an idiot, man. He's like a Pan African dude, but he also has been planning a charter school for years, and the charter school is clearly not going to happen.
Wonder if he's just taking the money. Yeah,
he's a scammer, man. And people donate to him, and they listen to him, and. He's one of them dudes that'll tell you broccoli is man-made and you can cure your period with your diet and all that dumb shit. Fucking idiot.
You mentioned, we talked about Octavia Spencer and stuff and that Madam CJ. I did, one of my homies, shout out to the homie Damian Lemon, he was saying that he was going to start watching that, and he said, yeah, man, he kind of echoed some of the same things you were saying, like, I just see Ma just, you know, like last year between Ma and Luce, she hasn't had a good year with teens. So if there's no teenagers in this Madam C.J. Walker movie, you kind of got to count that as a win just from somebody that hasn't seen the show yet.
Oh, well, it's all autobiographical, so there are no spoilers, but there is a teen. She is gifted a child. They give her... She is gifted a teenage girl by Tiffany Haddish, which again, like I was, at the end of it, they do that whole thing where they like do like the slideshow with the, and so-and-so went on to do so-and-so, and so-and-so did this. They did that whole thing.
Okay.
But, so there's a teen, I forget her name. She's like an actual person who's still alive, and she's like kind of like runs the brand a little bit or something.
Oh, okay.
But, excuse me. But she's like she was a gifted. They try to make the film for both adults and children.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of sensitive topics, like her daughter's sexuality, is they frame it in a way that seems so gentle and so light-handed that it almost feels to take away from the seriousness of it, of the situation that she's in. Because, you know, Madam C.J. Walker's all like, you got to find a husband. I need some grandkids. What you doing around here without these kids? I need some kids. And her daughter's like, I'm gay. I don't want to give you no grandkids.
Is that what she said? Like, literally, the character said that?
The character didn't literally say that, but the character, like, she catches her with a woman at a certain point. And then she comes around to being accepting of her for who she is. She's like, you know, I'm not gonna tell you how to live your life. I know that you've always been different, and I love you regardless. I mean, it ends up being like a very warm Hallmark moment.
Yeah.
But then Tiffany is just like, well, I know how much you want a grandbaby, so here's this teenage girl that I have no idea
that
where this girl came
that
from.
I fucking hate. I gotta it's see this. I'm excited to see. I'm interested in seeing it. I mean, I did watch that Tyler Perry movie, Fall from Grace. So,
oh, that shit was awful.
Yeah,
the best way.
Yeah, so I always support the black stuff. So, it's just the only thing. I'm kind of like you in the way that obviously you can see these four episodes and get them and knock them out. But then Hulu released that Little Fires Everywhere with Reese Witherspoon and Kerry Washington, and I'm like. Two of my faves, I gotta see this, but then it's just piecemeal though.
Before I ask you this question, I just wanna say Reese Witherspoon is another one. I don't know if she's married. She's married. Damn. So I can't shoot my shot.
No.
This is the Risk It All episode of
The Mundane Festival.
The Mundane Festival. Yeah, this is the Risk It All episode. But Reese, if you and that man don't work out, Listen. That thing I said about Tracy with the white man. Don't take that to heart. You know what I'm saying? It's just social commentary, baby. You and Alicia Silverstone. Alicia Silverstone.
Oh, okay. She I don't know.
Listen. Shoot your shot. In the episode description, I just put put those women and put their at sign and said Don Will would like a word with you.
Dude, it's so funny. One of the funniest things, my friend, I'm not going to out this guy. He's one of my good buddies. He texted me this picture of a black actress on it. She posted a picture of her wedding on Instagram with her and her husband. And he's like, and she's married to a white guy. And he's like, man, I'm painting myself white next year.
Dating a what?
She's this black actress that he likes. Like, he goes crazy. He's like, loves this black actress. She recently married a white dude, and he texted me the picture, and he was like, I'm gonna paint myself white next year. It's like the funniest shit ever. I'm not outing this guy, but like, it's just like, oh my god, it was so funny.
Oh,
it's the funniest shit
ever. I don't remember where I got the term from, but I can't shake it.
Okay.
I wish I could remember who said it, but there was somebody. I forget what white woman it was, but somebody black was like, it was Patrice O'Neal. O'Neal.
Okay.
And I was watching one of his stand ups, and like a dude had a white woman in the audience, and he was just like, "You got you a quality white woman, my brother. You should be proud of yourself."
That's Elephant in the Room. Yeah, I was there.
Elephant in the Room.
I was there when he did that.
Oh,
yeah.
Man, really?
Yeah, I was at that taping. Yep.
So two other quality white women, very high quality white women.
Yeah.
I have to shout out.
Okay.
Kelly Ripa and Kristen Chenoweth.
I could see that.
The Good Place.
Is Kristen Chenoweth is on the Good Place? Are you talking about Kristen Bell?
Yeah, Kristen Bell. My bad. Who is Kristen Chenoweth?
Kristen Chenoweth is a actress, like a singer, actress, Broadway. Actor.
Two small white women, both named Kristen.
Yeah. Well, Chris.
Apologies.
Yeah, it's fine.
Kristen,
like,
Bell. Kristen Bell.
Veronica
Bell.
Mars. Yeah.
Nigga.
Oh yeah. She's
not
dope.
To be all, you know, like. Listen again, like, not to be all lusty towards the white women. I love my sisters. You know,
this is actually a safe space for that. But then at the same time, people will try to they could try to cancel you for this. So I don't know. Like, you, I
cancel me for what?
For thinking a white woman's attractive.
I mean, but we're gonna keep it moving. Ari Lennox out there. She is like her. Shoot or shoot. You know what I'm saying? I fuck with Ari Lennox too.
Yeah, she's attractive
as a singer and as a woman.
She's very talented. I don't know all of her stuff, but I know that she is good. I've listened to her some of her stuff. Yeah. No, I don't have a problem with that. You can say whoever you like, man. You like who you like. It should. They always tell us that it's not supposed to matter what color they are, but even though
it's not. But you know what I'm saying? Like, I feel like it's not, but it does. And I'll be 100% honest. And this might get me canceled.
And since you're on Ball, like, you don't know, Baller Alert could pick this up. I don't know, but your type of you raise the profile of the show. So I just don't want to put you in danger. That's all.
Listen, man. All I'm saying is that I don't necessarily. I don't. I just love women. You know what I'm saying? I love women.
I agree.
I just like women. So I'm trying to think of more women that I can shout out. Tabria Majors, or is that her name? Or
I don't know who that is. Now you're shouting out Instagram models.
Big body gal them.
Oh man, Instagram, and I've said this before on the show. Like, we have to thank them too for what the service that they're doing during this hard time of us being, you know, in quarantine.
Yeah, man.
Some of them, it almost seems like they don't even know what's happening. They just post like they normally post. Some of them, weirdly, are together, and they're doing TikTok videos together. And I don't want them to get sick. So I don't,
they're definitely gonna get sick. They ain't got no business TikToking together.
Yeah. So I don't know. Some of the best, and these happen to be black that I'm concerned about. So these ladies.
But I will say that comedy has exposed me to a larger number of white people.
Okay, I could do that. You know, I shouldn't even say this. I'm not going to say it. I'll say it off mic. I'll say it off. Remind me to say it to tell you after we're done.
And that's not that. Like, I really enjoy seeing the diversity of whites. Because again, like, as a black person, you see the diversity. I see the diversity of blacks. I know blacks we're not a monolith. You know what I'm saying? There's several types of blacks.
Yeah.
But it has shown me that there's a lot of diversity within the whites. You know what I'm saying? There's a range of white. And like, me being from the Midwest, a white person was just a fucking white person. Yeah. Oh, you was German, Italian, whatever, you white. And in New York, seeing people cling to cultural identity.
Right. A little more than they do.
Regardless of what their race is.
Yeah.
I don't know if I'm using the terminology right. It's kind of cool that I get to see, you know, like, I get to understand cultures and ethnicities in a way that I necessarily wasn't raised understanding.
It's just people being different. Like, I think one of the best job environments that I had, other than doing my theater camp job that my listeners know about, was working when I worked at Best Buy when I was in grad school. It was, everybody was there, like black, Mexican, white, Asian. It was fucking fun. You know, it was just people that are different, that come from a different place, or they do things a little different than you, or if you're from another state, oh, what's that like? What do you guys do? You know, it's like, even if you and I can talk about like the differences between Cincinnati and Maryland or DC or something like that. So it's always fascinating to me than everything just being like milk toast, or a little bit just everything just so homogenous rather than, you know, milk toast. But you know what I mean?
Right. So, you know, like in recapping, Kristen Bell, Tracee Ellis Ross, Ari Lennox,
Tiffany Haddish.
Listen, look at the spectrum. Look at the range. Look at the range of women I'm appreciating. You know what I'm saying?
It's a rainbow.
They're all lovely. They're all gorgeous. And they're all on my radar. So, ladies, again, if you're listening to this, if you're having trouble at home, I know quarantine got things kind of tight. You might be at odds with your boo. Holler at me. I'm right here. I got FaceTime. I got Instagram. I got all the things. Slide in the DMs. DMs is open. You know what I mean?
Let me ask you this. How good can these papitas from Papa John's be? You ever seen that commercial? Is Papa John's trying to come back? It's like a little the commercial just popped up. It's like a little, it's a pizza, but it's kind of a sandwich, and they fold it up. And I guess
the whole pizza folded?
It's like, it looks like it's a slice. Papitas. I think they're trying to appease, trying to get the Latinx community to, they want everybody to come back, I guess.
I haven't seen it. I got to Google it, but I know that that seems like a necessary invention. Yeah. We have calzones, so
that's really what it is. Yeah.
Like you're describing it. It sounds like you're just describing a calzone to me.
Basically, that's what I just did, pretty much. Yeah. Yeah.
But with a dumber name. So
they're just trying to get people to come to go to Papa John's.
Yeah, no, I wasn't going to Papa John's before the scandal. Before the scandal,
it was all right. I just, as far as like chain pizza places go, I mean, I would say Pizza Hut and certain Domino's pizzas are good.
Jesus Christ, Chris, what is wrong with you?
Well, I know now we live in the New York area. I mean, if they
I'm not even saying New York. I'm saying, well, okay.
Chain wise,
my bad.
Okay, we always do this when you're on, and I'm glad. I'm glad I got us into this, and then we'll wrap it up with this.
I got to do the pizza rankings.
Okay,
I am from the Midwest, and I wasn't eating New York style pizza my whole life. But you know what I'm saying? Pizza Hut did. Like, the book it, like when those fucking purple pant pizzas dropped.
Yeah.
Pizza Hut was slapping.
Okay.
I think that as time went on, something happened. the pizzas are definitely not as good. The crust feels more greasy. I still got to go with Little Caesars as my favorite.
Okay. So, you know, I don't think I would argue with you. Because I kind of want to ask you two things. I want to, and I appreciate that answer of you going with Little Caesars, because that's like I'm assuming that's like kind of a Midwest thing, right?
Yeah, it came from Detroit,
right?
But other than that, like, it was Little Caesars was like a treat, like, you know what I'm saying? Like,
yeah.
My mom would get it from and you would get two pizzas, and then they had the square pan one that was super cheesy.
Mm-hmm.
I might have to go buy one now,
dude.
I'm going outside and get a pizza.
I remember doing a gig in, it wasn't quite upstate New York. I forget the town, but it was maybe like a 60-mile, hour-and-a-half drive from my place in Jersey. And I drove past a Little Caesars. I was like, oh, shit, I'm going there after. I enjoyed it. And when I was a kid, I would hang out with my dad. My dad worked at a warehouse in Virginia when he was working for Sears. And they would do inventory, and I would hang out there, and they would get Little Caesars, and I fucking loved it. Okay, now, so I want to ask you this. Do you think, and I've had this theory, or I've been making this, I don't know, I've had these thoughts about the Black Twitter elite, how sometimes they can forget that most Americans, they go to chain restaurants sometimes. You know how, we've got the $200 date, that bullshit. What's the bullshit that comes up on Twitter all the time? $200 dates. I don't know. That's one of those things. But they try to act like certain restaurants are beneath them. Like, oh, you've never fucking been to Domino's. It's trash. Pizza Hut, like these Little Caesars is trash. I don't know. Do you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, there is a sort of like a harsher criticism of the food that you grew up on.
Yeah.
The food that you not even that you grew up on, like the food that's available to people.
Most people.
It's usually the people with the loudest voices in the room that have this criticism, but I will say that while I don't personally enjoy Applebee's or Fridays,
mm-hmm.
I don't enjoy it anymore because I have access to other things. But that doesn't mean that I won't fucking still go to Fridays or Applebee's.
That's what I mean. Yes, that's it. You distilled that in a great way. Yeah.
Granted, you know what I'm saying? Granted, I think that for me anyway, you know what I'm saying? Like those fast cash dining situations, a lot of times for me, I feel like, well, if I'm going to pay $25 to $30 for an entree, I might as well go somewhere where I'm actually going to enjoy the food more. So I'll go to, for me, it's more like supporting a local business. So I'll go to a Caribbean restaurant locally, or like a brick oven pizza joint that's not a chain.
Sure.
Mainly because I know that they need my money more than a national chain would.
Right.
But if I'm in fucking Ohio or Wisconsin or wherever the fuck I'm at, and that's what's available, I will go to a Denny's, nigga. I will fuck a Denny's up. I will.
Yeah.
Do all that shit, you know what I'm saying?
I remember doing a gig in Schenectady, New York. Schenectady and Albany did like two shows, and one in Schenectady, one in Albany. And at the end of the show, it was like New Year's Day. It was New Year's Eve show, whatever. And the Denny's was open. And that shit was on point. You know what I'm saying? Like, that shit was good.
Yeah, Denny's be slapping. Now, I don't give a fuck what nobody says.
I'm more Denny's of an IHOP guy, but there was no IHOP around, but it was good.
I mean, IHOP I've never really liked IHOP. I'm just gonna come out and say it.
Whoa, buddy! Wow.
Never really liked IHOP. I mean, I wasn't raised with IHOPs. I'm more of a Friendly's kind of guy.
Okay. Yeah.
Friendly's and Frisch's. We didn't have IHOP in Ohio.
Oh. Okay.
I wasn't like big on IHOP, but.
Fair enough.
When I got exposed to it in North Carolina, I remember it was the spot to go to because that's where the spot to go was. Like, everybody would go to IHOP. But again, like, even then, it was just like, oh, this shit ain't good. It's hash browns, it's dry.
I like the big steak omelet from there.
Nah, man, it ain't good, man. Denny's is better. IHOP might be the worst. IHOP might be the worst fast food, the worst fast cash breakfast dining.
Wow, really? Dude, you're saying this might get you canceled more so than the stuff about the women.
Absolutely, man. Look, you know it will, because all them women would go to IHOP with me. And if you want to go to IHOP, I won't change my stance, but I will.
Wow.
I will just order, go to IHOP.
I remember.
Yeah, like, IHOP,
go ahead.
IHOP ain't slapping like that, man. I'm sorry.
Wow, dude. I remember going there, talking to this woman, and she's like, I don't go to chain restaurants. I was like, you don't go to chain restaurants. I was like, okay. And then one time I took her to IHOP and she's like, oh my God. She started eating off my plate. I was like, oh, I thought you didn't like.
So would you put IHOP above Denny's?
Yes. I think mainly because I have a connection to it that when I was in grad school I worked at Best Buy on Fridays. We didn't have any class. And I worked at Best Buy from like 6 to 2 or 6 to 3, something like that. And I would go to IHOP and get a big steak omelet and a pink lemonade, and it would keep me right for the whole day.
Where would you put Waffle House in this equation? Above IHOP?
I haven't been to Waffle House as much, but it would have to be a 2, maybe. I don't know.
What other ones? What other diner situations do we got that we know about?
Like chain wise.
Yeah, I think IHOP, Denny's, and Waffle House are kind of like the three.
You've done more road than me, and I think anything else would just be not like.
Everything else is like just
mom and pop
regional,
or
hyper regional,
right?
Those are the big. That's yo IHOP, Wendy, IHOP,
Perkins,
Waffle House, Perkins. Okay, so here it is. Perkins is my version of IHOP. When I said Friendly's.
Okay.
Perkins.
Okay.
Perkins. I will fuck with Perkins. But Perkins is better than Waffle House. I mean, IHOP. Oh, hmm. And we forgot the father of them all.
Bob's Big Boy?
Bob Evans.
Bob Evans. They didn't start coming around until I might have been in college by the time. So that's like the late 90s.
My bad. Not Bob Evans. My bad. Cracker Barrel.
Now, see, Cracker Barrel, I haven't been to that many times.
Don't go, nigga. You ain't welcome. Don't go.
Well, that's why.
They don't want you in that motherfucker.
But but recently, within the last 2 years, they put like those fried chicken signs up. I feel like that's a bad signal for us.
What's the nigga butter lady?
But that's what I'm saying. I feel like that's a bad signal for us.
It is. I mean, but that's the thing, man. A, we're not allowed in that space. And B, the food ain't really that good, man. It's clear we're not allowed in there because they don't fucking make good food. That shit is dry and it's bland and it's white and it's fucking wicker and wood. And it feels like you're going to get 30 lashes if you fucking
damn
do something wrong in there. I don't fuck with them. I don't fuck with the rocket chairs. I mean, the best part about the whole franchise is that they have like a little store.
The gift shop. Where you can get those big ass candy bars. Where you get
those candy sticks.
Yeah.
But other than that, man, Cracker Barrel is absolute bottom of the barrel. Let's put it on the shirt, man. Cracker Barrel, bottom of the barrel. Boycott Cracker Barrel. Boycott Cracker Barrel 2020.
Sounds like you had an incident at a Cracker Barrel.
I didn't, man. I just don't like. I don't like the phrase. And I don't think it's appropriate for 2020 to have your restaurant be named Cracker Barrel. I mean, we ain't got no spot called Nigga Hive or whatever the fuck. You know what I'm saying? Like,
yeah.
Get it out the paint. I think that the whites should be upset about Cracker Barrel in a way. I think there are connotations being made about America being great again at Cracker Barrel. that's my new platform.
Well, God, you know, I think you've got Denny's at one. You've got Denny's at one, and what's your number two?
No, my bad. I'm sliding Perkins in for Denny's.
Perkins at one.
Perkins and then Waffle House. I got to get to Waffle House.
All right.
Waffle House will be number one, but Waffle House is largely based on the person that you see making your food.
Mm.
The food is not all created equal at Waffle House. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like, also, part of the dining experience of Waffle House is that it's so dependent upon the actual Waffle House.
Okay.
Fair Perkins enough. Is Perkins.
I know Perkins, yeah. They hooked me up. Like they hooked me up with like a nice chicken tender platter with fries. And I felt like a fifth grader. I felt so good. I loved it. It was great. It was like, I did this gig out in, Bethlehem, Pennsylvania. And I was like, oh, we should go to Waffle House. And they're like, no, don't go to that Waffle House. Go to Perkins. Actually, that's what one of the comics told me. He's like, nope, just go to Perkins. I was like, all right.
Yeah.
Give me your pizza, your chain pizza restaurants in New York, and we'll get out of here. Your favorite chain pizza places. Little Caesars is number one.
Little Caesars, Domino's.
Okay.
Papa John's.
Papa John's at
being
three.
There.
Yeah. Higher than Pizza Hut, huh?
Man, Pizza Hut ain't on the list, man.
Wow.
I don't know. Like, the last time I had Pizza Hut, we were on the road. We were in some bumblefuck town in the middle of nowhere, and the car had broken down. So the only food we had was the Pizza Hut across the street from the car place. Went in there. Got pizza. I will say, I was very hungry. That probably factored into my enjoyment of said pizza.
Okay.
But it wasn't fantastic. It was just food.
Yeah.
I don't really. And again, I have strong emotional attachment. I have strong emotional attachment to Pizza Hut too, because I used to work at Pizza Hut.
Oh, okay.
I used to make my own pizzas, and I used to like be part of the Book It Club and paying pizzas and all that shit. But yo, man. nostalgia has not, time has not treated that memory well, because every time I go back to Pizza Hut, it's like, when was the last supper? No, you know.
I had Pizza Hut last week, and it was fantastic. It was good. Those wings, the wings are underrated, too.
Nigga, no.
Yeah. No. I mean, this one in Hackensack is pretty good, man.
All right, well, when this is over, we have to do the, we might as well ball out and get all three and just do a blind taste test. I mean, I can kind of tell what the spices are by looking at them.
Oh, yeah, you could. Oh, and you have to do like all cheese or some shit like that?
But, or we can do that. We can like mix up the wings too, because they all sell wings at this point.
I don't think Domino's doesn't have good wings.
Domino's has a pretty good selection of non-pizza items. So, like, their sandwiches are slapping.
Really?
The wings, yes, them fucking sandwiches, fire, 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 fire.
Huh.
The wings are okay. The thing I don't like about those pizza chain wings is that a lot of times they end up super soggy.
Yeah.
And I don't like soggy wings.
If I'm in New York, I would just go to Emmett's. I just love that place, that pizza place. That's Chicago deep dish. But they also, it's like near the Comedy Cellar.
I don't know Emmett's.
It's great. Look it up, and then you're gonna wanna go there when they, well, they're still doing delivery and stuff. But yeah, man, I like those places. I don't think I'm above it to be like, I will never eat. I don't know. It's just this elitism that I don't like on Twitter sometimes. I think some people forget where they came from.
Well, I remember, man. I haven't forgotten, man.
Yeah.
I'm still out here.
Yeah, man. Well, dude, this is so great. I was so happy to have you back on and shoot the shit with you, man. It's always a pleasure. You're a really talented artist and a good pal. I like to think that I knew you were cool. Like, obviously Wyatt knew you were cool, but it seemed like more people, as they got to know you, who you are, and you've made your imprint in the community, in the comedy world, where it's just been like, oh, Don Will. But I was like, nope, I knew before you fuckers. I knew who that guy was. Because when I did Night Train, I think, I don't know, when I came up to you, I was like, you're Don Will, right? And you were like, yeah. I was like, you're fucking awesome. And you come, and I come on stage, I was like, do you fucking Brooklyn assholes know who's DJing this show? I don't know, man.
Nope.
I don't know. But I'm glad that people are recognizing it now. But the asshole that I am, I have to let people know that I knew about you before everybody.
Man, stake your claim. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
You're rep. You have to have that rep.
Yeah.
Your rep is impeccable, man.
Yeah, I'm trying. I keep trying to work on myself, but some things I can't let go. There's some things that I'm trying to, that I'm like, it's like, you guys, now you're glomming on. But it helps you, though. It helps your career. And that's what's more important than me being a hip hop nerd, kind of, you know?
Well, I want to let you know you were appreciated, too. This was a very nice way to spend my Saturday. It was so nice, in fact, that I've forgotten that I haven't eaten until this whole conversation about food.
Me too.
Now I'm like,
yeah,
like I literally had a cup of coffee today. The fact that I need to do all my dishes to eat anything is making me, it's kind of like a appetite suppressor, because every time I get hungry I look at my sink like, fuck that.
are you gaming at all? Do you have a Switch?
I got a Nintendo Switch, but I'm not connected. I want to what's the thing where you connected to the to the other people? It's like a subscription service, right?
I have no clue. I don't have a Switch. I just remember, I think the last time I was at your place, maybe you had one. And I know.
Yeah, I have a Switch. Mainly, it only gets used when my daughter's around.
Ah, gotcha.
But that's only because it's so much fun to play that I will, like, if I would have cut on my Switch last week, I wouldn't have put that EP out.
Yeah, that's what I was about to say. I was about to say that. Yeah, I'm doing to you what my parents do to me. I'm gonna let you go. Hey, buddy, did you? What else you got? All right.
Yeah, my mom. That's my mom's favorite trick. She'd be like,
All right, I'll talk to you later. But did you know?
Yeah.
I guess I'll talk to you later. I'm going to go ahead and take this chicken out the freezer.
Mm-hmm.
It's just like they're five goodbyes. But
yeah.
We can hop on the phone sometime and not record it, you know what I'm saying? Talk like.
No doubt. We will do that.
I can talk my shit about women, white women, black women, all the women.
Oh my
without
God.
The cameras rolling.
Oh no.
I'm just trying to get canceled, man.
I think that'll boost your career if you get canceled, then you just come back. I think that's how it happens. Well,
we'll see, man.
Yeah. Well, hold on to the line, man. Plug your wares, man. We want to get this stuff off Bandcamp, right?
Yeah. We got the Safe EP is on Bandcamp right now exclusively. I might bring it to other platforms, but for now it lives on Bandcamp. Donwill.bandcamp.com. My solo album, One Word, No Space, is up there too, but that's everywhere on all digital platforms. And Butterboy we're streaming that live on Monday. We'll probably be streaming that live going forward until the entertainment ban is lifted. So you can catch me on Monday nights at butterboy.com website, I think is where it'll be.
Okay.
And other than that, lock me in on socials. I'll be putting up all relevant information and content on Instagram. And I'll be putting up jokes and relevant information on Twitter, because that's what I do on Twitter, is I tweet at motherfuckers.
And there you have it.
I don't have to tell you what it is, because you can scroll down to the show description. It's just at Donwill everywhere, at Donwill everywhere. And if you're on Instagram, it's donwill.me, because a punk motherfucker is named DJ Donwill there, so he has my name.
Ah.
Well, no, my bad. No, my bad. And I'm not DJ Donwell. I'm just Donwell. He's DJ Donwell. There's a space in his name. I'm One Word, No Spaces. And that's why I named the album One Word, No Spaces.
Yeah.
But also, I've been saying that for a while as a slogan, but,
it's a cool slogan. I like it.
Yo, man, the funny thing is, after I named my album that, I started like hearing myself saying it in so many songs. It's just like a campaign slogan.
Yeah, it's like you're a new Tigolo.
Tigolo. Man, I don't know how he does that. Are you able to do that?
Do what? I think so. Yeah. New Tigolo. Ah, fuck, I can. I don't know.
Got to
practice.
Like, he has it's a tongue twister. And I think that he does it. Next time you talk to him, ask him if he does it for like a vocal dexterity warm up, like
maybe
an enunciation. Because the thing is, like, it feels like a vocal exercise more than like a thing, but it's also a thing, like a tag or phrase or whatever.
Yeah.
Whatever. Now I'm doing that thing to you that you were doing to me.
It's so all right. It's fine.
We should end this.
It's all good, man. Yeah, I need to eat. I'm gonna warm some stuff up. I got me some salmon cakes and some broccoli. It's going to be good. I think I'll do that.
Oh, man. Jealous.
Well, if you can find I can also do the fresh salmon, and I like to do that. I love doing it, actually. But then I also like, you know, going back to my roots of when my mom, you get you some bumblebee pink salmon, and I like to do two cans, because you have leftovers. You do like make 7 or 8 patties out of it. You get yourself some. Yeah. You get yourself some eggs. So if you do two cans, you put two eggs in it. You get you some breadcrumbs, either breadcrumbs, croutons, or Ritz crackers, or any type of cracker really. A few crackers and crumble them up, and you mix it up, and you make your patties. And you can put some oil in a frying pan, put them on the stove, let them brown, and they're ready. And or you could just, you know, do that, and you can put it in the oven. You can put green peppers and onions over them. My mom used to do that. But yeah, it's really good. And you can get yourself some hot sauce of your choice. And it's good.
For the first time ever, I had a tuna melt.
Oh, my God. They're great.
It was my modified, bro. You know, like, I know tuna melts are so heavily reliant on mayonnaise.
that, you know, like they've never been appealing to me because of the mayonnaise aspect.
It doesn't
have, I made my own and they're pretty good.
Yeah, I've tried to do that at home a couple times. It's been okay. I think the best one that I had, I think maybe the best one I had was at Junior's that somebody made for me. That, you know, that somebody made for me at the Junior's in Brooklyn.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, man. All right. Well, hold on to the line. And guys, thank you so much for listening. I appreciate you. And we will talk to you next time. Take it easy.